Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Bigfoot Live, starring Thomas Gardy, the world's most respected authority on the phenomena known as Bigfoot. Sit back and relax as we take you on a journey into the world of the unknown. Believer or skeptic, man or woman, you will be mesmerized by real people telling real descriptions about real encounters. Fasten your seatbelts, America. It's reality radio at its finest, and it starts now.
In 1967, my whole life changed. I saw the Roger Patterson film on the Johnny Carson show. And I gotta tell you, that's the day I thought I was gonna challenge the world and go out and find this thing.
We had found like 12 tracks in the ground. I didn't want to believe it was Bigfoot.
Oh, yeah.
He's moving right now. He's moving right now. He's straight out of the tree line. He's moving to the right. See him? He's going to the right. He's going into the trees right now. Come here, look.
I'm Bob Hallmark, and I'm a reporter with ABC Television in Tyler, Longview. It's been my pleasure to be with Tom Scotty and his team tonight, and I have to admit that I was skeptical when I came out here. I thought we, at this time in our history, had the technology to be able to find one of these things if it existed. But after seeing the footprints and the dig marks in the sand and what I believe to be a very large creature running at a high rate of speed through the woods, I'm convinced I'm going to have to change my opinion on Bigfoot.
I turned, I saw this thing standing by my gator.
When I saw the actual footprints, I realized they were something special and probably Sasquatch.
When I landed on the ground, I was kind of thinking, this ain't no human being. It's got to be something else.
www.searchingforbigfoot.com.
Out in the swamps, what you think I've seen? Something strange, you know. Sasquatch sitting on the side of his knee, and he was talking to Moccasin Joe. Well, the party they gonna have out in the St. John's Swamps. Sasquatch doing a brand new dance, and he called it the Bigfoot Stomp.
Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Marco Bill on the Bigfoot Live broadcast. And folks, it's that time of the week again. It's time for the Wednesday evening Bigfoot Live radio show with our host, Mr. Tom Viscardi. And now, everybody, the man who put the big back into Bigfoot, our host and renowned Bigfoot researcher, Mr. Tom Viscardi. Good evening, Tom. How are you tonight?
My. Another week blows by, and here we are together once again. Hello to all of our good friends and neighbors and new friends that we're about to meet around this beautiful globe. And those of you who are on the West Coast where I am, it's the shits. We're back down, locked down. No restaurants. You can't go inside to eat. You can't go outside to eat. You can get delivery. And you can call it up and go pick it up yourself. It's terrible. It's just terrible, okay? I finally had a friend pass away due to COVID-19. Hell of a horse trainer, Bob Hess Sr. And I consider him a friend. He trained one of my horses. I thought he was one of the greatest guys around. Then I go to find out that at the racetrack, Golden Gate, up there in Berkeley, Albany, California, outside looking in San Francisco, 83 years of age, and next thing you go to find out, out of 300 employees out there on the back track, 350, 247 of them had COVID. He contracted and he passed away. To Bob Jr., his son, who's a hell of a trainer himself, and Mike Randolph and his lovely wife and family, our condolences go out to all of them. I have to tell you, folks, this is a deadly, deadly disease, and they're saying that the next strain here that we're going through is even worse than the first. It's crazy in hell, and they put a big damper on people's traveling for the holidays, including Father Ray. He was coming out to be with us, where he does every holiday, from Christmas to New Year's, and he has to have a COVID test 72 hours before he hits the plane. Then he has to pass all this rigmarole restrictions. Then when he gets to me, he has to quarantine for 10 days. Then when he goes back, he has to go through the same regime and quarantine for 2 weeks. So 24 days, he can't do nothing. So I don't know if this is such a great thing. And I got to be honest with you, I'm getting bored. You know, I used to have cabin fever. Everybody's calling up, hey, Biscardi, when the hell are you going to hit the road? Well, I'd love to hit the road tomorrow, but I can't. They've got the limitations on us, folks. We've got the shackles on our hands. We got the boots on the car tires because we can't go nowhere. But believe me, when it opens, and then I heard today, oh, well, the EDD is given another $300 a week for unemployment, and they extended it until September. So let's use some logic here, folks. If the EDD extended it till September, does that mean we're going to be on lockdown until September? I don't know. But they said it before it was going to be till January. Well, hell, January 1 is a week and 2 days from now. But now they changed it, and then we got locked down here until the 8th of January, and then today they said, sorry, you're on lockdown till the end of January. So what are they going to do? They're going to give us the old lick of the lollipop, folks? Oh, well, if you're good boys and girls and you stay home and shelter in place and practice distancing, wash your hands, wear your mask, and don't congregate in large groups, well, then maybe we'll take the dampener off. Man, I'm telling you, I'm fed up with it already. And are we going to have to go through 9 more months of this shit? I don't know. Am I going to take the shot? Hell no, I'm not going to take the shot. I don't have COVID now. What makes you think I'm going to put it in my body and hope to live? And then I go to find out that the first 10,000 inoculations somewhere in this world, 19 people died. And then you ask about it, and they said, well, somebody's got to take it for the team. Really? Is that how it works? Well, let somebody else be the guinea pig. I'll wait 3 to 5 to 6 months to see how it all unfolds before I decide to take any. I've never taken a flu shot. How do you like that? And everybody's saying, well, you know, Biscardi, you're up there in age. You should take the flu shot. Well, I never took it before, and I'm still around. What makes you think I'm going to take it now? It's tough, man. It's really tough, folks. You got to think about this for your own self and your families. I don't know. I don't know if you're going to take the vaccine. I don't know if it's going to be available for another 3 months or so. I'm tired of picking up the news, tired of turning on that boob tube. All I get is to hear the same rhetoric bullshit. So, as we all know, let's wipe the slate clean and forget about that. We're in the holiday season. In 2 days from now, it's going to be Christmas, Christ's birthday. Wasn't that going to be beautiful? And we're all going to enjoy it, folks. Even though we're shackled and we're sheltering in place and a lot of our loved ones aren't going to be with us. But there are possibilities. We got Zoom. We got that Zoom, man. Wow. So go to your computer and hook up with Zoom. And you got 27 people all on there. And And then what do? Well, you can't eat together unless you want to get a turkey leg or a piece of ham or a piece of prime rib and show everybody, well, we're eating anyway, and at least we're bullshitting with each other. I guess whatever pops your cork is the way to go. I'm not doing that, okay? I'm not doing that. I just told all my family that, hey, next year for all around, hopefully we'll continue it on. And if it's not this time next year, it'll be the next time. Who knows? But all I want to do in advance to wish each and every one of you people around the globe the most merriest Christmas ever. And a prosperous new year that's coming down the pike, because I know we're all going to need it, believe me. So, those of you who listened from last week's show, heard on the podcast, we had a good buddy of ours, Alex Hearn. Now, I haven't talked to my co-host, Mr. Rockstar, today, and I hope everybody's on. I hope you're even hearing me. Rockstar, how are you? So I guess I've been talking to myself. Rocky, you there? Rocky?
Well, now I'm here.
Have I been talking to myself, or can people hear me?
No, you've been talking to the world.
Well, that's a beautiful thing. How you feeling? How's the family?
It is. Everybody's great.
Everybody's
good? We're not taking shots either. If we take shots, it's going to be whiskey.
That's my boy. I don't blame you. So, you know, like I was telling everybody, we had Alex Hearn on. Great, great, great guy. He has some great stories to tell. And I told everybody, wait a minute, let's continue this on so we can hear part two of the whole story. And before I get into that, is he with us tonight, by the way?
Yes, he is.
Okay, good. So before we get into Alex, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to tell you who we're going to talk about after Alex. We're going to talk about the Knights Templar. You ever hear of that name? Knights Templar.
Yeah.
In the last 5 years, it's really come into focus. A lot of these new TV programs and Treasure of Oak Island and all that kind of crap. Well, we're going to get into it pretty deep. And I never knew that my paisan, Father Ray, my brother from another mother, knows a little bit about it and how they were into the Catholic Church there for a while. It goes back way before we ever knew, ladies and gentlemen. It started in 1118, and it went straight up to the 1200s, 1300s, 1400s, 1500s. It all started, man, as they used to call themselves, before it became the Knights Templar, it was the Poor Fellow Soldiers of Christ and the Temple of Solomon. That was all around to protect the pilgrims way back then. But it gets into some hairy stuff. And I'm going to tell you, you talked about the Holy Grail and all that. We're going to get into all of that stuff. Then it gets into the Freemasonry thing and all that. It's a phenomenal story. But we're going to have Father Ray talk on it after we get done with Alex Hearn. Without any further ado, let's get out there to Arizona and talk to my good old buddy. How you doing, son?
Doing great, Pop. Doing great. Hey,
do you know anything about the Knights Templar?
Tonight. Yeah, that's the Poor Fellow Soldiers of Christ, right?
You hit it right on the head. I mean, it's it blew me away. Okay, it was an amazing thing. It was created as a military order. And when you get into it, it just don't stop, okay? And you start to read, you can't wait to get to the next page. And if you're seeing it in a video or something on TV, you can't wait till the next version of it, okay? It just goes on and on and on, and it's just history in the making. And then see how they came here to the States, and it has to do with something with That's the reason why the Covenant and the Holy Grail that's on the treasure of Oak Island, they're thinking that it was down in that area too. Well, those poor bastards have been doing that for 11 years now, I think. I hope to God they're going to dig to China, that's for damn sure. And they still haven't come up with anything yet, but it hits the curiosity.
Hey, they found a button.
So, hey, what?
They found a button. They found a button.
Oh, they did?
Yeah, a brass button. I don't know. It probably fell off one of their coats.
Gosh. I get it. Well, listen, I rambled on here for the first quarter of the hour, and you know what? Before we get on with Alex here, Mr. Co-host, Mr. Rockstar, why don't we, because last week we got so enthralled with Alex, we didn't get any commercials in. Let's pay some bills. Can we do that?
Here we go.
Here we go.
Well,
here we thought we went.
Here we go.
1967, my whole life changed. I saw the Roger Patterson film on the Johnny Carson show. And I gotta tell you, that's the day I thought I was gonna challenge the world and go out and find this thing.
We had found like 12 tracks in the ground. I didn't want to believe it was Bigfoot.
Oh, yeah.
Did you hear that? He's moving right now. He's moving right now. He's straight out of the tree line. He's moving to the right. See him? He's going to the right. He's going into the trees right now. Come here, look.
I'm Bob Hallmark, and I'm a reporter with ABC Television in Tyler, Longview. It's been my pleasure to be with Tom Scotty and his team tonight, and I have to admit that I was skeptical when I came out here. I thought we, at this time in our history, had the technology to be able to find one of these things if it existed. But after seeing the footprints and the dig marks in the sand and what I believe to be a very large creature running at a high rate of speed through the woods, I'm convinced I'm going to have to change my opinion on Bigfoot.
I turned, I saw this thing standing by my gator.
When I saw the actual footprints, I realized they were something special and probably Sasquatch.
Well, I landed on the ground, I'm kind of thinking, this ain't no human being. It's got to be something else.
We're back.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, I don't need to tell you, I've been saying it for the last 16 years. That was the first and best movie that we've ever done, and hopefully there's a lot more to come, and I'm sure there will be this new one coming out. If you go to this Tubi TV, you'll see one of our movies, and you'll see it for free. Just make sure you stay on for 21 minutes. What's the name of that movie, co-host?
It's I wish you hadn't asked me. Now I have to use my brain. Brutal Bigfoot.
That's right. Brutal Bigfoot Encounters. That's correct. You bet.
That's right.
And it's real easy, folks. Just go to TubiTV.com, and put in my name, Tom Biscardi or Bigfoot, and it'll go right to it, and you'll see it. And it's they've done a hell of a job, and I'm really, really proud of them. By the way, did you get those stickers for the pizza boxes?
No, I haven't.
Really?
No, I haven't got any yet.
Yeah, he talked to me last week. That was he shipped them out to you.
No, we haven't got them yet.
Okay, fair enough. All right, ladies and gentlemen, you waited long enough, and we got the next 20 minutes to hear from our good buddy over there in Arizona. And if you would, Alex, why don't you start where we left off? And then what I want you to do after we close that section, the gentleman that died, that we went out to his house and his wife made a nice meal to it for us, We went with him up in the mountains. You know which guy I'm talking about?
Good old Mitch.
Good old Mitch. Yeah. I want you to get into about with him and about his encounter and how he put that whole rig together. I thought it was kind of cool. Without any further ado, ladies and gentlemen, let's listen to Alex Hearn around the globe, and he's going to pick up from where he left off last week. Go ahead, Alex.
So a quick kind of catch us up. If you remember, that was the night, we were talking about the night that I went up in the mountains and did a live broadcast for you, you know. I think it was around 2008, if you know what I mean, and we were dealing with those yo-yos. We don't need to give them a plug. And I just wanted to do something nice for you, so I went out up onto the mountain and did your show from the mountain, did the call-in from the mountain. And afterwards, I went down a little bit, just about 500,000 feet down the mountain to the first campsite I could find from the peak, and, you know, just to camp out for the night. Kind of too dangerous to drive those mountain roads at night. If you're, I don't think we got you up to the top because the rig was too big. There's a couple of spots there where there's just inches before you fall off, and that, you know, before you go over the side of the cliff, and there's no railings. And this was Mitch and I's special area we called the hot zone. And we were this actual incident was 200, 300 yards from where Mitch had his first sighting, one of the first times we were up there. So at this location, we just finished the show, and I've set up camp, and I've got something good to eat, and I hear this ungodly growl scream. I mean, louder than you ever heard it, made my whole body vibrate. And it literally was coming from the bushes, you know, relatively close to me. And this night, I wasn't brave. It was probably 5-6 months before the incident that we talked about up in White River with AK. And his guys, and I was all by myself, so I wasn't about to be brave and end up, you know, on that other guy's missing website. But I stayed there all night. I was terrified after that. I got in the truck. I didn't get out. I was at first I was even a little terrified to roll down the windows. And you know, when I go out, I'm packing, so. I mean, it wasn't like I couldn't have protected myself, but whatever, from normal situations, but whatever I heard sounded like it was massive. And it didn't sound like my, you know, Glock 40 was going to take it down, you know? So I just kind of stayed in the truck and didn't get out until I had to. I had my two sausages, a couple of beverages, and I was so terrified. That night, I fell asleep in the driver's seat. I woke up, and those two beverages were still right there. I guess I had ate the sausages, but not the beverages. One of the scariest incidences I've ever had. We were pretty much done with that story. So, I mean, we got almost all of it out last week. So that's relatively the brunt of it. Let's get into Mitch's sighting that was, you know, probably 200, 300 yards right behind me on a different road. So the road coming down from the peak, there's a cutoff that goes to Murphy's Ranch, and that's the first turnoff on the road coming down. And right before that turnoff on the main road, it was right behind Mitch, just like when we heard the scream up in White River and McNary. He hit his brakes, and I hit my brakes, and he got out. We were looking down a ravine, and there was a giant rock kind of encampment down there, a bunch of rocks and giant boulders, and they either came up through the ground that way or they rolled down there from the top, but they were kind of formed, so they made a shelter. And what Mitch saw was a creature step up from those rocks. And myself and his nephew, we ran down there as quick as we could. Of course, it wasn't there when we were running down there, but when we get down to the rocks, you can see a path through the brush, which incidentally would have went right towards the campsite I was at, you know, a year later and had the incident. So, and that's, we were already up there because we had got a bunch of reports of both large black cats and something scary bothering the campers up there. And it was an area that had been closed for many years due to flash flooding that had killed a lot of people. Because it's a mining road, it's not very safe. There's no way to get off the road if there was a flash flood, and that's what happened. It's kind of, you're tucked in. There's a creek there. The road goes next to the creek, but it's a natural, you know, watershed, and if there's any kind of rain, it kind of all funnels into this area, and, you know, real fast you can get in danger there. The road, it'd be overwhelmed with water, and it's happened many times. When you go up there in the spring, there's almost always debris scattered about from the winter runoff. So a flash flood is similar to that. And back in the 60s or 70s, there was a bunch of people didn't make it out in this area. So we've gone up there probably the last 15 years or so, Mitch and I, you know, before he passed away. And Mitch has done a lot of videos. So there's a great video of his looking into this. It's not really a cave. It was a structure that something had made. Didn't really look
mainly. I thought it was a burrow. It looked to me like a burrow.
It was a burrow with a bunch of dried grass over the top.
Right.
Leaves. So, yeah, it was kind of halfway between a burrow, not really a cave, but a burrowed into the ground and then covered it up. Mitch, with all his family, filming and such, and crawled into the burrow. And he's filming while he's crawling in there. And he hears something. And off in the distance back, it's pitch black, but you can see something move. And he backs out of the cave. I call it a cave still, but you know, like I said, it was more grassy and burrowed into the ground. But something was in there. Something small was in there when he crawled in. Now, I'd say if it was a baby bear, it probably would have been making some noise. And mama bear probably wouldn't have been too far away. And I think there probably would have been a massacre there because Mitch had, you know, six or so people with him that day. So it was something that was just tucking itself up as far as it could into the back of that burrow/cave. And with the limited light of Mitch's camera, you could see movement. It was really, really, really fascinating. And, of course, you know, we're all no-kill. We don't really want to disturb anything. So Mitch backs out. It's all on video. He backs out of this structure and dwelling. And they stood around for a while, but they decided not to bother whatever it was. And they left. And, you know, we'd go back and check that many times afterwards, and it was completely empty after that. And then another time we went there, and it was semi dilapidated. So when we saw it at first, something must have been taking care of it because it was in pretty good shape. And I could take you right to where that spot was. You and I were there. You, I, and Rob were right there. It was right off the road from where we camped that night.
You know, I'll never forget it, and you described it so perfectly about we had to leave the trailer and just use the truck to go up higher when we did go up because you could see a panorama of everything out there. And while it was up there, when we went down to get service, I had called in and said, look, if you don't hear from me in 3 days, you know we didn't
get
out of here. I'll never forget that.
Remember what happened?
Huh?
I think that was the time that they called and They had the Forest Service looking for us.
You exactly were. That's exact. Oh, you remember that? What a memory you've got.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. I remember you, Rob, and I were a little bit perturbed, but in the end, it was somebody being safe and caring about.
Well, you know, they cared. You know, they didn't hear from us.
Yep.
And the key to it was that, hey, look, it is what it is, and boom, we got the Forest Service was looking for us. You got it right, yeah.
Yep.
But what were some of the other stories with Mitch? Because Mitch and you were there for a long time.
Yeah, well, some great stuff happened there. I don't think did I get into my original sighting that was with Mitch right on that spot?
No, you did. You talked about it. You just glanced over it.
Cool. Well, I'll be quick because we got a lot to talk about tonight. And you know how I get. So we're at the Rose Creek campground, very near to it. And one of the guys from my crew hadn't shown up yet. And it's getting late, starting to get dark. And those roads are really hard to find. They are marked, but they're marked kind of precariously, where there'll be a sign on the right to tell you to turn to the left, and that sign's hidden by three trees that are overgrown. And I knew that Vic wouldn't be able to find the road, even though he was the one of us that lived, you know, grew up most near to that area, just back in Globe, 50 miles away or so. So I went out while it was getting dark, just, you know, dusk, to leave a sign for him. And I wrote up a sign with the AZCRO this way and fluorescent, you know, marker and such, and put it on one of the posts there. There was another guy there give him a little plug, from the Roosevelt Bait Shop. His name was Jerry. He's the owner. And he was there with his family, and we'd been talking to him on and off. And he was back a couple hundred yards down the road trying to get his ATV running, and it wasn't running right. Well, you know, we all know that when these creatures are around, sometimes mechanical things and electronics don't work. Well, I should have been ready because I should have thought of that, but you don't think of it. And I walked by Jerry, said hello to him. He's trying to start this ATV and it won't start. It's been running great all week. It was, you know, something he put together himself, but it's been running great. And he's got two of them and neither one would start. He's trying to get them up on the road so he can push them, get them to jump start and such, and they won't start. And now I'm 200 yards down the road, and I hammer this sign up for Vic, and I'm walking back. Now I'm facing Jerry, and the same kind of sound that I heard behind me that night, the twigs breaking when you called, I hear to my left. And the road's only two lanes. It's a highway, but it's only two lanes, and it's dirt. And I hear these twigs and branches breaking to my left, and I look, and I'm kind of amazed because I see a head and some shoulders and an arm kind of sticking up through the bushes and the trees, and the arms are lifting up the branches. So almost the only way to describe it is like a reverse swimming motion. You know, instead of digging in with the arms to swim, he's pushing up. And he's pushing these branches out of the way, and I say he, but I think it was a she, pushing these branches out of the way and then stepping into that spot where he lifts the branches and then doing the same thing with the other arm and just kind of lifting the branches and walking right through the trees. Maybe you and I couldn't do that, but this thing is just moving those branches like they're nothing, and I'm looking right at it. And the reason that I could hear it all of a sudden is that Jerry's ATV just died, and it wasn't making any sounds at all, and that's how I could hear the twigs breaking. Well, I'm looking at this thing for a couple of seconds, what seemed like a couple of seconds, and it must have dawned on it that it couldn't hear the ATV anymore either, because it was looking straight ahead, kind of towards Jerry, just like I was, and then it stopped, and it turned towards me, and when it turned towards me, I was already staring right at it. And its eyes just opened wide up. And this got me in trouble on that big international radio show that's on at night. It looked at me, and I heard in my mind, I heard it said, "Oh, shit, he can see me." And that, I heard it in my mind, like telepathy or something. I don't know, but I know that's what that thing was feeling. And it, a look of amazement and then fear on its face, and it instantly, in a flash, turned its back to me, and it ran through the bushes directly away from me. So it was running walking parallel to me at first. When it saw me, it turned away and went, directly perpendicular away from us. And when it did that, it just did that same motion with the trees. And after a few seconds, the branches dropped in behind it, and I couldn't see it anymore. But I could see the branches moving, kind of like the gopher going through the ground. You see the ground bubbling up. I could see the branches, brushing, going up and down as it ran away. And then it stopped, and I could hear footprints like boom, 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 boom as it ran away. And I stood there dumbfounded for a few minutes. And Jerry, and this is the incident that, I think the caller asked last week, why did I chase that creature? And it was because of this incident. In this case, I just stood there like amazed. And I looked at Jerry just kind of instinctively, and he was looking right at me. And he's holding his ATV, but he's just dumbfounded. And he says, "What was that?" And I said, "Did you see it too?" I yelled it. And he said, "Yeah." And he just, he nodded. He didn't really say yeah. And he put his head down. He rolled the ATV down the hill, turned it the other way, kick-started it, and it started right up. And he drove it, and his son drove their ATVs right to the camp. And I stood there a few more minutes. I thought about chasing it, but I said, I'm by myself. I don't have my normal stuff with me. I left a bunch of stuff in the camp. I took a hammer and the paper, and that was it. And I didn't have my cameras, nothing. So I went back to camp. When I was walking by Jerry's camp, I was going to go over to him, and he just shook his head no and said, don't come over. And he had asked us not to tell his wife and kids what we were doing. He didn't want them scared, so he just didn't want me to come talk to him in front of the family. The next morning, he packed up his stuff and was gone. He only lives, 20 miles, 30 miles from there, but he was gone. No questions asked, just left. And I went back to the camp and got my equipment and a couple of people, and we went back to the spot. And the reason that the branches stopped moving and I could hear it running, on what sounded like dirt, is because you go a couple hundred yards into those branches and there's a forest road there. And it used to come right out to the highway, but now it's blocked off, or at that time it was blocked off. It's since been opened. And it went right up to the peak, and then it would go behind our camp all the way into the creek way in the back, a couple of miles. And earlier that day, Mitch's grandson and I had walked all the way down that road, but we didn't realize that it's the other end came out, a couple miles up at the near the camp we were at, because it was blocked off. You couldn't tell it was there anymore at that time. So it hit that road and, of course, made its escape. And that made sense, because this camp that Mitch and I go in, that we use for our base camp whenever possible, constantly we had activity up on the ridge above the camp. And, of course, this road goes right up there. And so they could come in on the road. In other words, they don't have to walk through trees and such. It's just a dirt road, real rough dirt road, a fire road. And this is how they were getting into the camp. And we had a bunch of people that had incidents up in the camp, down the hill, all the way from the ridge down to the camp on that hill. And the main story that got us into this location was the infamous outhouse ordeal. And I don't know if you think we have enough time, we'll go into that quickly, but I don't want to tie up your whole show.
No, go into that. That's an interesting story.
Yeah, it's a great one. So, and this one has been reported to the Forest Service. The Forest Service confirmed this report for us. At the time, we were very friendly with the forest rangers up there. This is a report that came in to Mitch and I when we had my forum back in 2006 and 2007. And this husband and wife for camping. And they, you know, it's very, very dark and very, very rural area. Like I said, wilderness area almost, but at this location there is, you know, outhouses. And so the wife needed to go to the outhouse, and the husband went with her. They went up to the outhouse. It's up halfway up this hill for some reason, I guess to keep it from getting flooded at the bottom of the hill. And filled, and the wife used the outhouse, and the husband stayed outside, and then the husband went into the outhouse, and the wife stayed outside. Well, while the husband was in there, the wife heard something coming down the hill towards the camp, and at night she could see nothing. It's heavily forested, but at night especially, it's pitch black dark. Not even the moonlight's getting through there, you know, 100-foot ponderosa pines and such. And she can hear it coming. It's a steep hill. Branches are breaking. Rocks are getting kicked, and they're rolling down the hill. And she's banging on the outhouse for the husband to let her in. And finally he does. He lets her in, and they're both in this outhouse. It's kind of comical, actually. And they can hear something come down to the outhouse, and it's walking all around and banging and making noises. And here's the thing. It could have been a bear, except for whatever it was, started banging on trees and banging on the outhouse with other branches. And, you know, that they got out of that outhouse eventually. They stayed in the outhouse, you know, all night. The noise stopped, but they were afraid to leave until it got light out. So they stayed in that outhouse until it got, you know, 6 in the morning and the sun was shining and such. And they went to their trailer and they left. There's other reports of people in that campground packing up and leaving, well, not packing up, but getting in their vehicles and leaving their whole camp there. So there's all sorts of weird stuff going on in this camp. And then to top it off, there's reports of large black cats in this area, too. One summer, one of the last summers that Mitch and I were up there together, in just the first half of the summer, there was 13 dogs missing in this area. So people say, you know, oh, I'm safe because I have a gun, or I'm safe because I have my dog with me. Well, many of these missing people that go missing in the woods have a dog with them, and they find the dog and not the person. So the dog isn't going to save you. But in this location, the dogs are going missing. And you know, there's not much life around there. There's limited life, the forest rangers and the campers. These dogs would be found. They're not found. They would be able to seek out some kind of people. And, you know, I'm sure some people will find a dog in the woods who will just take it home. But at least somebody's going to turn this dog into the Forest Service. And as far as I know, none of them have been returned.
You know, I got to tell you, I hear these stories and I reminisce. And it seems like it happened yesterday. It really mm-hmm. does. You know, I miss Mitch, hell of a gentleman. A man that got enthralled, got caught up into it.
Yep.
Let me ask you one question that I've asked probably everybody, but I don't think I've ever asked you. How many years now have you been looking for a Sasquatch, Bigfoot? Call it what you want.
So, you know, and of course some of this was not very professional, I say, but I've been doing this on and off since I was in my 20s. You know, I had the incident that I've told many times on your show, hunting with my dad when I was about 10 or 12. My dad sent me back to camp because some dogs were following us and didn't want the dogs to get a shot because the hunters can shoot the dogs in New Hampshire. They run down the deer and kill the deer. So I took the dogs back, and while I was taking the dogs back, something followed me out of the woods. And don't know what that was. You know, the lady at the hotel told us, oh, that was the old man of the woods. He's just making sure you're safe. So I don't know, you know, that's what a lot of people kind of call Sasquatch. So I've been pretty much since the day I could drive, been finding excuses to get my buddies and go in the woods, and been doing research probably since my 20s. So you're talking, you know, since the 80s. So 40 years now, I say, but it's probably more like 35, I guess.
So it's a long, you have tenure in this business.
Long time. Yeah. Yep.
Well, you know what? I'm going to tell you, I want you to have the most wonderful Christmas and New Year's if we don't talk, you and your family, and try to get by this pandemic the best way you can. And listen close, because we're going to bring Father Ray in. We're going to bring the last quarter of the show with his wisdom, talking about the Knights Templar. Ladies and gentlemen, you just got through hearing Alex Hearn from Arizona, the well-documented and smart guy. I've been with him many times. He's been with me many times, and I've enjoyed him immensely. Take care of yourself. Mute yourself out, Alex. God bless you.
All right. Hey, Tom, one thing.
Yeah.
AK said to make sure I tell you hello and Merry Christmas.
I'm going to give him a call on Christmas. Thank you for that.
All right.
Okay.
You're welcome.
Be well. Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, Alex Hearn from Arizona. Been with us a long time. He's been in the industry a long time, as you heard him tell it. Without any further ado, I want to get out there to Gallup, New Mexico, and bring my brother, Father Ray Mullman, who is schooled in this Knights Templar stuff, because I've gotten intrigued with it in the last couple of 3 weeks. And when I found out that he knew a lot about it, I says, I'm going to have you talk on it. Do you mind? He says, no. He says, I don't want people to get bored. I said, they won't get bored. Just talk and let them know what you know and how the whole thing came about. At the top of the hour, I told you guys that it started in 1118 by a French knight, okay, Huguet de Payens, and he created this military order. It was called Poor Fellow Soldiers of Christ and the Temple of Solomon, which later became, you know, and they're out there to protect the pilgrims, later became the Knights Templar. Without any further ado, let's get Brother Ray on the line. Ray, you out there?
Yes, Fratello, I'm here.
Tell us what you know. And by the way, there's something I didn't bring up. You know, the Templars got very rich fighting for God, and that was
mm-hmm.
their excuse. The Templars got rich fighting for God. Whatever happened? Or what do you – let's scratch that. Tell us
okay.
what you know about the Knights Templar, because what got me interested was how they went into Catholicism. So you got
okay.
the score. You got the next 12 minutes. Take advantage of it.
All right. I will I'm looking at my watch, and I will conclude my remarks in 11 minutes. First of all, I'm going to say one sentence in regard to the COVID-19 vaccination. I'm not interested in getting it at this time, because I've heard that there was some membrane cell from fetal tissue that was used in the making of this. Now, I don't know if that's true or not, but I'd like to get that ironed out first. So I would hold off from getting it just for a moral reason. The Knights Templar. The Knights Templar did start in 1118. The first crusade was successful. Pope Urban II called for the crusades from in a sermon in Provence in 1095. The first crusade got organized, went through Asia Minor, and got to the Holy Land, and conquered Jerusalem in 1099. Okay. So now Jerusalem is in Christian hands. Christian pilgrims were always in danger taking the pilgrim road. They could get ambushed. They could have from Muslims. They could get money stolen from them or get taken into slavery, etc. So in 1118, this order, a military order, was organized, the Poor Fellows Knights for Christ, and they were basically escorts for the pilgrims going to particularly Jerusalem, to the holy places in the Holy Land, keeping them safe. And with Jerusalem at this time in Christian hands, they established themselves on the Temple Mount, there where the Dome of the Rock is. That piece of real estate is sacred to the three major monotheistic religions of the world, to Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. All three religions consider that place very holy. And
is that called again Mount of the Olives?
Temple Mount, Mount Moriah. Mount Zion is right there. The Mount of Olives is right across the Kidron Valley from the temple area.
Okay.
But if you see pictures of old Jerusalem and you see this octagon building with a golden dome over it. It's a mosque.
Yes.
And
yes.
It's that's the Temple Mount. At the Dome of the Rock, there's a rock underneath it, and Muslims believe that is the place from which the Prophet Muhammad ascended into heaven. That's the place where the temples, the Temple of Solomon, the rebuilt Temple of Ezra and Nehemiah, that's the temple Jesus went into and worshipped in, and et cetera. And it's a very holy place. Okay. These knights establish themselves there on the Temple Mount, and they're doing excavations. They found that there were stables underneath, and where they could put 1,000 horses under there. The holy objects, the Ark of the Covenant. We don't know what happened to the Ark of the Covenant. It just stopped getting mentioned in the Bible after the time of the Babylonian exile in 587 B.C., perhaps the Babylonians destroyed it. But some people think maybe the prophet Jeremiah buried it on Mount of Olives, or it is a. And rumor was that these knights, Templars, they were digging under the Temple Mount, etc. They found the Ark of the Covenant, the Holy Grail. Now, some people will argue what it is, but traditionally it's supposed to be the cup Jesus used at the Last Supper.
Let me stop you there, because, forgive me, I heard it was many different cups. Last Supper
okay.
used there, but how come all the, and I looked at the pictures, and all the tumblers and all the cups were all the same.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't believe that was the cup. It was supposedly used as the cup that one of the disciples or whoever they were, when Christ was on the cross, took some blood and put it in there. You know who I'm talking about?
That's another story. That's another of what the Holy Grail is.
That's right. Okay. And then there's three or four different others.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, which is the one that we're to believe, Father Ray?
Well, you know, if the Last Supper was a Seder meal, there would have been four drinks of wine during the Seder meal, and supposedly that the last drink, the last cup of wine, the fourth cup, was supposedly when Jesus said that this is the cup of sorrow, because the Seder meal recalls the Hebrews' exodus from Egypt, and the night when the angel of death passed over the houses of the Israelites, each year Jews celebrate the Passover meal. They have Seder. They have four cups of wine, so maybe that's an explanation for the four cups, and supposedly the last cup, the cup of remembrance that Jesus took this and said, "This is the cup. This is the cup of the new covenant in my blood." And so, suppose it was supposed that the Knights Templar had these and other holy objects that were very holy for Christendom, and they would go out. They took the vows of poverty, chastity, and obedience, but also they were a military order. They trained militarily for the purpose of guarding Christian pilgrims, but also being able to be called out and engage in battle with. And they were the shock troops of the 12th and 13th century. They were the fight. You mentioned that they were rich. Yes, they were. They became very popular. People were young men were flocking to join this order. The individuals took vows of poverty. They didn't own anything themselves. The order did. They had houses set up throughout Christendom, throughout Europe, they're credited with the modern checking system, because people were going to go on pilgrimage, and instead of carrying a chest of gold with you to pay for things, you give them their gold and their to the Templars in one of their houses in Europe, and they would get scrip. And they could, and then as they went along, they could write checks, as it were, write out scripts for the for whatever money they needed. That way, they didn't have to carry gold and silver and things with them, and lessened the likelihood of being robbed. And people gave money to the order. They also gave lands. They would go to temple. In London today, you go to Temple Church, which was a temple, Temple Church built in the 12th century, I believe, and built as a replica of the Church of the Holy Sepulchre in Jerusalem.
Okay, so let me stop you there for a second. So we know that Judaism was in there, the Jews. We know that Christianity was there, and we know that Muslims were there. What
yes.
was the religion of the Knights Templar?
The Christians. They were.
Wanted to hear from you. They were the.
Yep.
Now, were they the Catholics from the 1100s, or did
yes.
they be, mold into the Catholics?
Nope, they were Catholics. The Church approved this order, and they were Catholics to defend the faith and defend the faith. They were trusted people. Landed people gave them. Money gave them land, so they could build churches and offices and headquarters and in different places recruit people. Now,
okay, so let me ask you this,
mm-hmm.
and you've always been truthful. Have they morphed in? Has the Knights Templar morphed into the Masons or division of?
It's a theory. Historians thinking about it, because as I just said, the order was very wealthy. King Philip IV of France coveted their wealth, and he needed money, and he asked the Pope. Two popes, and they refused.
Let me stop you there. We'll continue this, ladies and gentlemen, next week with Father Ray. Done an excellent job. I'm very proud of you. Alex, thank you so much from the bottom of my heart. And I know that, Father Ray, I know where you're going to be and what you're going to be doing, which will be a beautiful thing. And you're going to have some great food and libations. To my co-host, to all you people around the globe who's listening, to Rocky, thank you for being a great friend, brother, and, of course, my family member, most of all.
Thanks.
And, of course, we got
Thanks,
the Swede
Tom.
And we got Doyle, and we got Leo, and we got everybody else down the mile. Kudos and salutations. Merry Christmas to each and every one of you. Bye-bye.
Well, everybody, that wraps it up for another show. Listen in next week, and we'll hear the rest of the story. And Father Ray, I'll call you immediately with Alex's phone number.
Okay.
And I want to thank everybody for coming on and everybody listening in. And everybody have a very Merry Christmas. And good night.
Good night.
Well, folks, once again, it's time to say so long. We'd like to thank Mr. Tom Biscardi and his guests and the Bigfoot team for joining us, and we'd especially like to thank you, our listeners, for tuning in. This is Marco Bill saying see you next Wednesday evening for some more Bigfoot Live radio show entertainment with Mr. Tom Biscardi and his team. And until then, keep the Bigfoot live and keep Bigfooting. See you next week.
Three men with a gold and a pack that they'd hold and a promise till the day that they die. Answers to the questions no one's found before. Driving determination, the only key they had to unlock the door. Monsters, myths, and mysteries, legends, tales, and facts. We'll put them together.